We're actually holding in the middle of a paragraph in Sukkah, but I guess we might as well start over from the beginning of that paragraph since we kind of broke off. Bottom of page Mem Hei, Ois Dalad. So the Gemara says, "M'tan Rabbanan Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Yezir Sheshavas b'Golul Ha'Oyin B'Sukkosi Sherab Yechon Ben Rabbi Loi B'Kesori." It happened once that Rabbi Lozer stayed over on Shabbos, one Shabbos in the Upper Galil, in the Sukkah of Rabbi Yechon and the son of Rabbi Loi, B'Kesori, in the city of Kesori, V'Amrila B'Kesorin. Others say it was the city of Kesorin. We learned last time that Rabbi Eliezer had a Talmud named Rabbi Loi. Possibly this might be his son, or possibly it might be a different one. We find the name Eloi in somewhat common use back then. Anyway, Rabbi Eliezer stayed over Shabbos, and he was in that sukkah. He gia chamal sukkosa. The son reached the sukkah, and Omalei said, Rabbi Yechanan asks him, Rabbi Mausha Efres, alayah sadin, am I allowed to spread over a sheet on it on Shabbos? Now, at this point, the Gemara assumes that the question is mitzad the dinim of sukkah, because you can't put a sheet over the schach, you would passel it. Later on, the Gemara points out that it's not necessarily so. But in that case, then you have to ask, I mean, doesn't Rabbi Yochanan know a clear Mishnah that says that not? As we said last time, Tosfos earlier in the Masechta discusses that maybe it's only a problem when you're putting the sheet, because otherwise without it, the schach will fall off. In other words, in effect, the sheet is necessary to keep the schach in place, and therefore that would be a reason to passel it. Maybe it's not a problem when you're putting it for shade. Anyway, though, the Gemara ends up saying that it can't be that it was doing sukkahs, because as we learned last time, Rabbi Eliezer himself holds you have to stay home for all of sukkahs. So what is he doing by Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Loi's sukkah doing sukkahs? Therefore, the Gemara says, the Gemara ends up saying it was a different Shabbos during the year, and they're not sitting in the sukkah for the mitzvah. They're sitting in the sukkah because it was a nice, cool, shady area. But now the problem is it's not so cool and shady because the sun is beating down on it. So he's asking whether he can put a sheet up. The question basically comes down to, are you allowed to add to an oil aray on Shabbos? You have a temporary roof, in this case, the schach of the sukkah. Are you allowed to extend that on Shabbos? Now, in the end, the halacha ends up saying, the Gemara ends up saying, the halacha is like the chachamim, that you are allowed to. So you have various examples in halacha where you have a temporary tent. For example, we talked about last time, the hood of a baby carriage. Another example would be also, you have this as far as mechitzis. So you have, for example, some of those folding mechitzis that they have sometimes in shuls and other multifunction spaces. As long as it's open partially, at least one tefach before Shabbos, then you are in fact allowed to open it the rest of the way. But the question was, according to Rabbi Eliezer, well, Rabbi Eliezer didn't want to give a straight answer because, as the Gemara goes on to say, he never wanted to say something that he hadn't clearly heard from his Rebbe, which we've learned back in Yuma, various possibilities, what exactly that means. But in any case, so instead of giving a straight answer, he diverted him to another topic. Omalei, so he answers him, Ein l'chokol shevet v'shevet mi'Yisrael, shalai hemen yimenu shofet. There's not a single shevet among the Jewish people that a shofet, one of the shoftim between the time of Yoshua and the time of Shmuel, came from. And Rashi goes through and shows how you have all of the sons of all of the descendants of Rachel are covered. Yeshua is from Ephraim, Ehud from Benjamin, Gidon from Manasseh. Then you have, as far as Bila, you have Don and Naphtali. You have Shimshon from Don and Baruch from Naphtali, from Kedesh Naphtali. So that covers Bila. As far as the sons of Leah, Rashi points out, I don't clearly find where we find any from Reuven or Shimon, but Levi we have Eli. Yehuda, we have Ivtson, otherwise known as Boaz. From Yisachar, you have Tola. From Zvulun, you have Eloin has Zvuloni. So that covers all the children of Leah. And as far as Zilpah, Rashi says, I didn't clearly find any that say that says that on them that it come from God and Osher, but still, Rabbi Eliezer had the Kabbalah, apparently, that there were shoftim from all of them. Different Mephoshim talk about different possibilities about some of it. Rashi also mentions that the number of the shoftim, where we don't clearly see in the Pesukim what shevet they're from. So a number of the Mephoshim point out that some of them, it's not so hard to figure out. For example, Yiftach is not in Rashi's list, but the Pasuk says, Vayelad Gilad is Yiftach, and Gilad is the son of Manasseh, so it's clear that, or a descendant of Manasseh at least, so it's clear that Yiftach is from Manasseh. And you have examples of a couple of others as well. A number of the Mephoshim bring in this connection, a Medrash that we started talking about last time, that says that every Shevet in fact produced a Shofet, except for Shevet Shimon, because of what they did in Shittim over there with the Znus, with the Benois Midian. Anyway, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out over here, you know, it may well be some of the Shoftim may have been descended from one of these missing Shvatim on their mother's side. We find, for example, we find by Shimshon, the Medrash says his father was from Shevet Dan, therefore he's part of Shevet Dan himself, but his mother is identified with a woman mentioned in Divrei Yamim from Shevet Yehuda. Similarly, the Gemara tells us in Masechet Megillah that Mordechai was descended from Binyamin on his mother's on his father's side, but he's descended from Yehuda on his mother's side, and that's one reason why he's called Ish Yehudi. So by the same token, then you can have with some of the Shoftim, their mothers were descended from one of the missing Shvatim, and therefore that counts that Shevet produced a Shoftim. Now, on the face of it, again, Rabbi Eliezer is just saying this in order to divert Rabbi Yochanan from the question because he didn't want to give a straight answer. On the other hand, Maharsha points out there is a remez in it saying that, you know, you have the same way as in every generation, Hashem provided Shoftim for the Jewish people. So fine, instead of asking me, go find your local Shoftim, go find your local Rav or your local Beis Din and ask him what the halacha would be. And don't ask me because as he's going to go on to say, I'm not going to give an answer unless I befeit or shkud it from my Rebbe. But you can ask one of the other Chachamim of the Dur. And they'll be able to answer you. He gear chamalachtsia sukkah. Now the sun kept on moving in the sky, and eventually it's directly above the sukkah. And again, Rabbi Yochanan asks him, Mausha Ephris alay asadin, am I allowed to spread out a sheet over the sukkah for our comfort? Again, Rabbi Eliezer did not want to answer. Omalay, and again, he gives him a diverting answer. There's not a single shevet from which Nevi'im did not come. And again, Mephoshim go through and show how we find Nevi'im from every one or almost every one of the Shvatim. And furthermore, v'shevet Yehuda, v'shevet Binyamin, hamid malachim al pi hanavim, shevet Yehuda and Binyamin have on top of that, they produced kings over the whole Jewish people who were appointed by Nevi'im. Meaning, you have other Shvatim that produced kings as well. In fact, the Aseres HaShvatim had among their kings were ones from various Shvatim, and you do find some of them were appointed by Nevi'im as well. Yeravam was appointed by Achi Ashiloni, Yehu was appointed by Yonah, who was sent by Elisha to do it. However, they didn't rule over the whole Jewish people. When we talk about kings who ruled over the entire Jewish people, that you find only from Yehuda and Binyamin, Shaul from Binyamin, and David and Shlomo from Yehuda. We don't mean Eitz Yosef points out you shouldn't think it means that Shevet Yehuda and Binyamin did not produce Nevi'im. We do clearly find Nevi'im from Shevet Yehuda. For example, the Gemara tells us in Megillah that Omotz, the father of Yeshaya, who himself was a Navi, is actually a brother of Amatzia, the king of Yehuda, which makes Yeshaya a cousin and a second cousin and whatever of the kings of Yehuda in his times. So of course Shevet Yehuda at least produced Nevi'im. What we mean is that they in addition produced kings who ruled over the whole Jewish people and who were appointed by Nevi'im. Anyway, again, he's giving a diverting answer. On the face of it, he's not giving a straight out answer. Again, there's a hint in it that if you want to know the answer, you know, even if you don't want to ask a Rav, you can't find a Rav to ask. You know, the Or HaNer explains he's hinting to him. You know, as far as the Jewish people, in Nevi'im Haim, B'nei Nevi'im Haim, you ask your average Yid, he'll be able to give you an answer. He may not know the actual halacha, but he'll know what he's seen his parents and his grandparents and before him do. Now the sun continued moving, and now the sun is already reaching Rabbi Eliezer's feet. So now it's really going to be, in other words, it's going to be very hot and uncomfortable in the sukkah. And Rabbi Eliezer may even get sunburned or something. Not Rabbi Yochanan ben Eloi sodin or peres aleh. So Rabbi Yochanan took the took the sheet and spread it out over the sukkah. He took the initiative. You know what? We can't worry about it anymore. Rabbi Eliezer is going to be in discomfort. We have to do this. And after all, Rabbi Eliezer didn't say out flat out that it's ulcer. Hifsho Rabbi Eliezer talisa olav l'achod of v'yotza. At that point, Rabbi Eliezer swung his talis behind him and left. In other words, he picked himself up, put his talis behind him like he's wrapped himself in it, and he left the sukkah. Because he didn't want it to be that people are going to think that he actually said it's mutter. He didn't say befeirush that it's aser, but he didn't want to say befeirush that it's mutter either, and he didn't want people to think, oh, Rabbi Eliezer is sitting in the sukkah with a sheet over it. It must be mutter, therefore he left. And the Gemara points out, Loi mipnei shefluga b'dvarim. Now, to begin with, when he said this whole thing about the shoftim and about the Nevi'im and all, it's not because he was just trying to push off Rabbi Yochanan with words, Ela mipnei shalai omadava, shalai shamim pirabah, but because he never wanted to say anything that he hadn't heard befeirush from his Rebbe. And in this case, he hadn't. He hadn't heard clearly from his Rebbe one way or the other on that. So therefore, he didn't want to say. As we talked about previously, is it that this is only in matters of svara, as Marusha says? Is it only while his Rebbe was alive, as the Sfasemis says? Is it that most other Chachamim would generalize from something that their Rebbeim had said and deduce a halacha from that? And Rabbi Eliezer didn't want to do that. A few different possibilities. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan, Maisa Rabbi Eliezer Sheshavas Begolol HaElyon. Another time it happened, or maybe it was the same time, that Rabbi Eliezer stayed over Shabbos in the upper Galil. V'shaluhu Lamed Halachas B'Hilchus Sukkah. They asked him 30 questions in Hilchus Sukkah. Shtei Meser Amalehem Shamaiti. About 12 of them he said, I heard from my Rebbe, and I can give you the answer. Oshmeina Esther Amalehem Lo Shamaiti. The other 18 he said, I haven't heard anything, and therefore I can't give you an answer. Yon Yaakov points out, in the Galil HaElyon, they didn't necessarily know who Rabbi Eliezer is, how great a Talmud Chacham he is. He lived in Lud, which is in the south of Eretz Yisrael, as we learned last time. So in the upper Galil, which is a couple of dozen miles away, they may not have been familiar with him. He might well have figured, you know what, and the Gemara says elsewhere, in a place where Talmud Chacham is not well known, he's allowed to publicize the fact that he's a Talmud Chacham, so people should give him the proper cover. So he could well have said on all these questions, I have an answer, and they would know to respect him as a Talmud Chacham, but still he didn't want to do that. But that's why the Gemara makes a point of saying that this was in the Galil HaElyon. Anyway. Rabbi Yehuda says it was the other way around. Shmona Esther Amalham Shemaiti, Shtem Esther Amalham Lo Shemaiti. 18 things he says, I heard the answer. 12 things he says, I didn't. Either way, Omru Loi, they said to him, Rebbe, Kol Dvarecha Einan Ela Mipi Hashmua, is everything that you're saying only what you heard from your Rebbe? Don't you have anything independent to say on your own? And Yon Yaakov points out, they're also asking him that when you have, I understand if the other Chachamim disagree with you on some things, you're concerned you may be considered a Zaken Mamre, so therefore you might not want to give your opinion there. And in fact, of course, we have the famous story with Tanu Shalach Noi, where Rabbi Eliezer got in trouble for maintaining his own opinion. But they say to him, all these 12 or 18 things that you don't have the answer, is every one of them a subject to Machlokas? There's not one of them that's universally agreed to that you can give us an answer. Omalahem, so he answers them, his kaktuni loima dover shalai shamaiti me pira boisai. You're going to force me now to say something that I didn't hear from my Rebbe. Meaning, I'm going to tell you about my midas, one of which is I don't say something that I didn't hear from my Rebbe. Now, my Rebbe never told me in so many words that I should do this. I derived this from the way they acted. As we're going to say, as the Gemara is going to say soon, that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai acted this way. Now you're going to force me, in order to justify myself, I'm going to have to, for the first time, say something that I didn't clearly hear from my Rebbe. That's what Marsha says, that's the first possibility. The other possibility is he may be saying it as a rhetorical question. His kaktuni loima dovash l'shamaitim v'pi rabbeisai. Do you expect to force me to say something that I hadn't heard from my Rebbe? And he tells them, let me tell you, my midas. Nobody ever came ahead of me to the Beis Medrash. I was always the first one there. I never slept in the Beis Medrash, whether a full sleep or whether only a nap. Now, even though a Talmud Chacham technically is allowed to sleep in the Beis Medrash, the Gemara tells us in Megillah, to a certain extent, the Beis Medrash is considered the house of the Talmud Chachamim, and therefore, the same way as a person can sleep in his house, the same way a person can at least sleep a nap in the Beis Medrash, but he was machmer on himself not to do that. I never left anybody behind in the Beis Medrash and went out. In other words, I was always the last one to leave. I never spoke Sichas Cholin. I never talked mundane talk. That's not words of Torah. And I never said anything in my life that I didn't clearly hear from my Rebbe. Mao Shuo explains. Now, why is he mentioning all these things? Why does he have to mention all these middos? It should be enough for him to explain that he didn't say anything he heard, he didn't hear from his Rebbe. He says, in other words, you shouldn't think the reason why I'm only saying things that I heard from my Rebbe is because maybe I didn't bother being in the Beis Medrash all the time, and therefore there may well be things that were said there in the Torah discussions, and I don't know them, and therefore I can't say on them because somebody might contradict me. No, because I was always the first one to go in, the last one to leave, and I never spoke Sichas Chulin, and I never napped in the Beis Medrash, etc., and therefore I was always alert, and I always know, I'm always on the ball, and I know what's going on in the Beis Medrash, and if I'm not telling you an answer, it's because I didn't hear it from my Rebbe, and not because I don't know it. Okay. Going back earlier in the Perek, you have at the beginning of the Perek, you have where it talks about that if a person sleeps under a bed in the sukkah, he's not Yotze, and you have the famous story involving Tovi, the slave of Rav Gamliel, who slept under the bed in the sukkah, and Rav Gamliel says to the Chachamim, you see my slave Tovi, that he's a Talmid Chacham, and he knows that you can't, that Avodim, a potter from the sukkah, therefore he's sleeping under the bed, which Mefoshim say, in other words, that what Tovi, now why is he Bechlal sleeping under the bed, then let him go sleep in the house, because he wanted to be there, Alderach, like we just said about Rav Eliezer, maybe this is why the and Yaakov put them out of order, in order similar to Rabbi Eliezer. He wanted to always be there when the Chachamim are going to be sleeping in the sukkah, and they're going to be talking Divrei Torah before they go to sleep. He wants to be there to absorb all of it, but he doesn't want to take up valuable room in the sukkah that could be used by other people who need to be Yotze the Mitzvah, therefore he slept under the bed. And the Mishnah says, "Well, the feed darkeinu lamadnu." The Mishnah says, "By the way, we can learn from what Rav Gamliel says that if a person sleeps under the bed in the sukkah, he's not yotze." And the Gemara talks about this is when the bed is 10 tefachim tall, because then it's considered an oil of its own. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Acha ba'ada, Amar Rav Amnuna, Amar Rab, minayin shafilu sichas tamar chachamim tzricha limud." How do we know that even the casual conversation of Talmid Chachamim has to be learned? Because here, Rav Gamliel is not coming to teach everybody a halacha. He's priding himself. He's talking about, look how great my slave Tovi is. And as we learned at the end of Yuma, where just a few days ago, we said that there were many descendants of Canaan who would have been like Tovi and deserved to even have smicha, but Canaan messed things up for them. So Rav Gamliel, on the face of it, is not coming to teach a halacha. Nevertheless, from his sichas cholin, we learn this din that you're not yotze sleeping under the bed in the sukkah. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Va'olayu halo yibol," his leaf will not wither. In other words, even the leaf, even they have like the most important thing that a tree produces is its fruit. The leaves are only like a very unimportant thing compared to the fruit. Nevertheless, it won't wither. It won't fall off. Meaning that even the leaves, even the unimportant talk of a Talmid Chacham, still needs to be learned and needs to be delved into. What? Yeah, like he was saying it almost like as a joke, like look how great my slave Tovi is. No, Rashi Sichas Cholin is talking about earlier when Rabbi Eliezer says I never spoke Sichas Cholin, he means Dvar Havayu Tzchoik, that I never joked and I never whatever. So Rashi says, similar to what Marsha says in more detail, that it's not that I didn't pay attention at the Beis Medrash, it's that, here we're talking Sichas Cholin, Rabbi Gamliel is not making a joke, he's saying a fact, but there is an interesting explanation from Rabbi Yitzchok, the Rebbe's father, that analyzes this little piece of Gemara over here and points out a number of things. First of all, we have the expression over here, sichas tamid chachamim. It's al derech, like you have the expression about sichas avdei al yofesh sichosam shal avdei ovis. We have over there about the story of Eliezer, Eved Avraham, going to fetch Rivka from Choron. You have the expression that Rashi says over there that the sicha of the avdei ovis is more precious than the Torah of the children. And there you have the relationship between Eliezer and Avraham is similar to the relationship between Tovi and Rav Gamliel. They're both avodim knanim who are working for a great tamid chacham. In fact, he goes on and points out Gamliel is related to the chesed of Avraham Avinu, Gamliel Moloshim Goimo Chasodim. So there's an actual connection over there. And he says also that the Gemara is using the pasuk Va'olehu Loyibo, because after all, we're talking about dinim of the sukkah, where the schach is made out of leaves. Therefore, the Gemara brings the pasuk Va'olehu, even the leaves of the Talmud Chacham won't wither, because he's talking about the sukkah and you learn something from it. Yeah. Rabbi Yitzchak does these amazing things. Yeah. Okay. Further on in the Perek, this is actually a piece connected with what we learned last time about, we learned about the dinim of sleeping outside the sukkah, and incidentally, the Gemara talked about the dinim of sleeping or napping in tefillin. So in this connection, the Gemara talks about a little more about the dinim of sleep. A person is not supposed to sleep during the day more than the amount of time that a horse sleeps. The kama shenas hasra shift in nishan. How long does a horse sleep? 60 breaths. Now you have different opinions among the poskim. What is that in terms of minutes? You have that Amami Fano brings in one of his trubas that if you calculate based on the normal human breathing rate, then it comes out to only about 3 minutes. So it would mean that a person during the day is not supposed to be taking a nap more than about 3 minutes, 3 minutes and a few seconds or whatever. On the other hand, there are poskim who say, and this is also relevant to at what point do you have to wash negovas, so if you sleep during the day, other poskim say that you go according to a horse's breaths. A horse, seeing as how it has bigger lungs, it breathes much more slowly than a person does, and therefore they calculate that shittin nishmi would be a half hour. This is where we have the concept that we know when a person sleeps for a half hour or more, they wash negovaser, is based on that opinion. Then actually the Shari Tshuva on Shulchan Aruch brings that the Arizal, it says, would nap 3 hours during the day. Mashma, that up to 3 hours is still not Shenas Asus yet. However, he says it's not really a solid proof, because who says the Arizal slept continuously the whole 3 hours? Maybe he slept for less than half an hour, and then he woke up, and then maybe even less than 3 minutes or whatever, and then he woke up, and then he went back to sleep, etc., and he slept in fits and starts. So not necessarily a proof that 3 solid hours would be considered less than shit initially. We see by Tzaddikim Bechlal that they slept very little. There was one time there was somebody by dollars by the Rebbe, a great Rav, I don't remember who, where the Rebbe was discussing with him something that's brought in Eishel Avraham from the Butchacher that says, when it said that Rambam brings, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that a person should have 8 hours a day of sleep. The Butchacher says that means 8 hours every 2 days. So 4 hours a night, not eight. So yeah. But here we're talking about sleeping during the day anyway. Yeah. Okay. Getting back to, we talked about Rabbi Eliezer's midis, and now the Gemara goes on to talk about Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's midis. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, after all, being Rabbi Eliezer's Rebbe, and he would be who Rabbi Eliezer learned his Hanhogas from. So Amru Olivar Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, mi yom of leisoch sichas cholin. In his whole life, he never talked mundane talk. Here we mean sichas cholin, like Rashi said before, like joking or exaggerated or whatever talk. And by the way, you have the Gemara in Bracha says that he always was careful to greet everybody in the street, even a goy, he's always the first one to greet him. So even though he's careful with sichas cholin, that doesn't mean that he's a misanthrope or something and is not friendly to people. Adrabba, he was very friendly and approachable to people. They say a similar thing, by the way, about the Chofetz Chaim. They say, you know, everybody thinks that Chofetz Chaim wrote the book on Lashon Hara. So you would think that maybe, you know, you talk with him. He's always going to be telling you, shh, whatever, you know, don't, this is Lashon Hara or whatever. People who actually knew him, B'chaim Chayusay, say that actually he was a great conversationalist. He just knew how to converse on the proper topics and to stay away from any trace of Lashon Hara. So yeah. Anyway, so V'loy Holach Dalat Amos V'loy Toto V'loy Tefillin. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai never walked 4 amos without learning Torah or without wearing tefillin. He never slept in the Beis Medrash of a fixed sleep, of a full sleep, or even a nap, like we said, like Rabbi Eliezer did. Nobody ever preceded him to the Beis Medrash. Again, like Rabbi Eliezer, he always was the first one there. He never left anybody behind in the Beis Medrash because he was always the last one to leave. Then we have extra. He never thought words of Torah in dirty alleys. You're passing through alleyways or side streets that are full of human waste or animal waste that smells bad or whatever. You're not allowed to, well, in those times, they didn't have actual bathrooms. People would often just go to the bathroom and they're in the street, in a side street or whatever. Yeah, so there would be sewage over there, yeah. So he would never think words of Torah in such places. Now, technically, the din is you're not allowed to. But nevertheless, the point is, since his mind was always full of Torah, it's a big chiddush that he's able to turn that off when he comes to such places. By the way, not all the Chachamim were able to do that. There's a very interesting Gemara in Zvachim where it says, I think Bakapora says, there's a particular halacha, he says, that I learned from Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon when he was in the bathroom. Now, how do you learn a halacha from him when he was in the bathroom? The vote is Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon was so fartift in Torah that even in the bathroom, he couldn't stop himself from saying words of Torah. And Bakapara, I think it is, or whoever it is, in the Gemara over there, learned that particular halacha from overhearing him. But here, Rabbi Yechim Manzaka was saying, was able to control that.
He didn't even realize,
apparently, yeah. No, there it's one of the later Chachamim, I think it's Bakapara, says about Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon that I heard this halacha from him that he was saying while he was in the bathroom. No, this is Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. He's not saying about himself. This is Omru Olav, the Chachamim of his generation, his Talmidim said about him. Nobody ever found him just sitting there and quiet. He's always sitting and learning Torah. Nobody else ever opened the door to the Beis Medrash for his Talmidim. Elohu ba'atzma, he himself would always open the door for them. He also, like Rabbi Eliezer, never said anything that he hadn't explicitly heard from his Rebbe. So as far as some of these things, Maharsha points out, for example, this that he's always wearing tefillin because that's the Keser Torah. And after all, the parashiyos represent learning Torah, lizikon me'enecha l'mantia Torah Hashem b'ficha, like we have in last week's parasha. The lohira b'mavoyos hamatunafos is the thing that I just said, that even though he's constantly learning Torah, he was able to turn that off when it comes to those places. The loy matze adam yoshev b'doimim, even though you have, conceivably, he could be reviewing Torah in his memory, nevertheless he didn't, he always said it with his lips. The loy pasach adam delos is he always would stay close to the door. Because this way, he says, the Talmidim, there might be jealousy among them. They're gonna start discussing among them which one is more important, which one is more or less important, which one should open the door for the other one. He didn't want that. He didn't want that kind of kina and that kind of bittul Torah. Therefore, he himself is going to open the door. And for that matter, also, Maharsha points out, it means, unlike in the yeshiva of Shmaya and Avtalion, whereas we lived in Yuma, there was a guard over there to prevent anybody from coming in unless they paid the fee, and Hillel couldn't afford it, and he went out onto the roof, etc., etc. Here, Rabbi Yechaman Zakeh himself is the guard by the door. So therefore, there doesn't need to be a Shomer HaPesach who's going to take fees from people and not allow them in. He would allow them in. Anyway, so Voloyim Adavash L'Shom Pi Rabbi Lo'olam, he never said anything that he hadn't clearly heard from his Rebbe. Voloy Omer Higia Eis Laman B'Beis HaMedrash. He never said it's time to stand up and then stop the learning in the Beis HaMedrash. Chutz Me Arve Pesachim V'Arve Yom HaKippurim. Except for Erev Pesach and Erev Yom Kippur. Erev Pesach, Rashi explains, first of all, people have to prepare their Korban Pesach. Most of Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai's life was during the Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was still standing. So people have to prepare their Korban Pesach. They need time on Erev Pesach for that. Second of all, you need that the children shouldn't fall asleep. And that includes, in other words, the fathers have to be home to help put the kids to bed. It means the fathers themselves have to help prepare for the Seder so they can start on time. So therefore, Erev Pesach, he would end his learning early. And Erev Yom Kippur, because they have to eat the Suda on Erev Yom Kippur. The Eslamid means it's time to stand up. You know, it's time like this. They would be sitting when they're learning certain parts of Torah, the difficult parts. So like this, he wouldn't say it's time to stand up and to stop learning, except for we're saying Erev Pesach and Erev Yom Kippur. And as we said, Rabbi Eliezer, his Talmud, followed all these practices after him. So even though Rabbi Eliezer only listed some of them before, that's again, like Maharsha said, he only listed the ones that were relevant to what they're asking him about why he's not saying anything that he hadn't heard from us, why he's saying on so many things, Lo Shamayti, but in fact, he had other practices like Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai, as we're saying here in the Gemara. By the way, you know, with all of that, you have where Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai says at the end of his life, on his deathbed, he says they were in brachas, I don't know which direction they're going to take me. And you have the famous explanation in Chassidus that even though, he lived 120 years, he spent his whole life learning and teaching Torah, but he was so busy always with the Tzibur, with doing things for the Tzibur and for his Talmidim and whatever, he never bothered to take the time to see, well, where am I holding the Pnimius? And therefore, now only on his deathbed, when he's finished his avoda, now it's time to think about that. And therefore, he's concerned about the Ezer Derech Melichinosi. Yeah.
Where does that leave us?
Yeah, really. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan, Shmoinim Talmidim Hoyle LeHilal Hazaken. Hilal Hazaken had 80 Talmidim. Now we don't just mean that he had only 80 Talmidim. The same way as, for example, Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai, we say in Pirkei Avos, he had 5 Talmidim. He had tens of thousands of Talmidim. We mean the primary Talmidim, the full-time ones, the ones who are his Talmidim, as in, you know, they're the Makabli HaTorah for the next door. Lamed Mehen Ru'im Shetishra Shechina Aleim Kamosh Rabbeinu. 30 of them would have been worthy that the Shechina should rest on them like Moshe Rabbeinu, except that, as the Gemara tells us elsewhere, the door wasn't roy for it. The Laman Mehen Ru'uyin Shatamad Lam Chamaki Yeshua Ben Nun. Another 30 deserved were of the caliber that the sun could stand still for them, like it stood still for Yeshua. Now, we find the sun stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu as well, but there's a couple of possibilities. First of all, by Yeshua, it lasted longer. Second of all, by Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem did it unilaterally, whereas by Yeshua, he asked for it. So the point is, they would have had this chus that they could ask for the sun to stand still, and it would. V'chof mehem beinanim. Then the other 20 were average. Gadol shebekulam Yonasan ben Uzziel. The greatest of them was Yonasan ben Uzziel. But the Rashbam in Baba Basra, where this Gemara is brought, says it means the greatest out of all the 80. Rabbeinu Gershom there says it means the greatest out of the 20 average ones. Anyway, v'kotn shebekulam Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai, the least of all of them was Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai. Now, later on, Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai eventually became the Av Beis Din, and for a brief time, he was the acting Nasi. So we certainly don't mean that he was the least among them in knowledge of Torah. Either we mean he was the youngest among them, or we mean that he was the least among them in the other things that the Gemara is going to point out over here, all these various auxiliary things of Torah. In Torah itself, there were other, he was the greatest, but in these auxiliary things, he was maybe the least of them. So Omru Olivar, Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai, they said about him, Shalo Yiniach Mikra Mishnah Talmud, he didn't leave aside anything that he didn't learn from Mikra, Tanakh, Mishnah, the Mishnayis, which are the basic halachas, Talmud, which is, this is long before the Gemara was composed, of course, but it means, Rashi explains, the analysis of the Mishnayis, what makes up the stuff of the Gemara, understanding where the halacha comes from, what situations it applies, the reason behind it, etc., is all Talmud. Halachas, the halachas l'moshe misinai, and Rashi gives a list of them, good aches and good asik, lovud, doifen akuma, a bunch of which are mentioned in this masechta, and so forth. What?
Is that cotton by age?
Yeah, so it's possible it means cotton by age, yeah. Halachas, v'hagodos, and things of agabda, Dikduke Torah, the details of the Torah, for example, when we have an extra word or an extra letter in the Torah from which we doubt in something, Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai knew all of those. The Dikduke Sofrim, and all the details of the Sofrim, of the Chachamim, all the details where the Chachamim made Takonis, Xeris, and whatever as a Siogla Torah. Kalos v'chamuris, all the kavachomers, Xeris Shavas, all the Xeris Shavas, Tkuf, and then not only and outside of Torah directly, also the things that are auxiliary to the Torah. Tkufis, to know when the Tkufis are, how the sun and moon move in the sky, and to know where they are at any given time, and therefore when the Tkufis and things like that will take place. The gematrios, things of gematria, which means not only gematria as in the numerical values of letters, Rashi points out, first of all, sometimes we actually learn halachas from some things, but it also means the various ways of transposing letters, atbash and other methods like that. There's an example later on in our Masechta. He knew all of those as well. We even have, Rashi refers to, you have examples in Psukim. For example, you have a couple of places in Sefer Yumia where it refers to Sheshach and it means Bavel, because Sheshach is atbash for Bavel. We actually have in one of the slichas for Shavuos v'Tammuz, we mentioned Ma'or Choshach v'gam Sheshach Mekadu Tznafani. That means that Sheshach whacked me around like a ball. They besieged me and then harmed me. So we see that Sheshach is a nickname for Bavel based on Atash. So he knew all those kinds of things. Sichas Malachi Asharis, he knew the speech and the conversations of the Malachi Asharis, the Sichas Shadim, the speech of the Shadim, the Sichas Dekolim, and the speech of the palm trees. Now Rashi says, what is the speech of the palm trees? I don't understand what that is. Goinim bring, and Rabbi Goin actually brings, there was someone in his time who knew how to, they would hang a sheet between palm trees on a breezy day, and they would see by the way the sheet moves and by the way the trees move, they would understand from it what the tree, this guy, Rabbi Avraham Kabasi, his name was, knew how to understand from that what the trees are speaking to one another. So Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai knew that kind of thing. Mesholos Kovsim. He also knew all the Mesholim that the Chachamim said that involved that mentioned laundry men. So we have, for example, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that a mayor was an expert in hundreds of Mesholim involving laundry men and foxes and different things like that, where they use them as Mesholim to explain things in Torah. He knew those. Mesholos Shualim and the Mesholos involving foxes. Dover Cotton, but Dover Godel. He knew all the small things and all the great things, Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai. So what do we mean? Shualim is a fox. So you have a fox. So you have the Gemara in Sanhedrin mentions the mashal that Rabbi Meir used involving a fox to teach us certain things in Torah. So Rabbi Yechonon Zakkai knew all of those. What do we mean by Dover Cotton, but Dover Godel? Dover Godel, Maisim Erkova. The great thing that he knew means Maisim Erkova, the secrets of Kabbalah. The Dover Kotin means Havaya Stabaya V'Rova, means all the discussions, all the analyses of Abaya and Rova that make up the body of the Gemara as we have it. He knew all of those. However, Rashi points out what happened was that by the time of the Amoraim, all of those things had been forgotten, and therefore Abaye and Rava had to re-raise those points and discuss them, which is why we have it in the Gemara under the names Abaye and Rava, but in fact, Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai knew all those points already. Both the Hakosev over here, quoting from the Ritva, and the Rashba, both over here, talk at great length. Now you have, when like this, when the Gemara is saying that Havaya Stabaya Varava, Dover Kotan, there was a mistaken understanding that people had in those times, in the time of the Rishonim, in the time of the Ritva and the Rashba, that says evidently the Gemara itself is saying that Havaya Stabaya Varava, the understanding of the Sugyas in Gemara, is Dover Kotan. It's an unimportant thing. So they thought philosophy, that's a great thing, that maybe that's what Maisim Merkava is, but to know the details of Torah, the Gemara itself is calling it Dover Kotan. They both say absolutely not. That's definitely not what the Gemara means. What it means is that either relative to, look, why do we have mitzvahs anyway? Why did the Eibush give us the details of mitzvahs? He himself doesn't need them. He gave them to us with Sarif Bamas Abrius in order to purify and refine us. They all reflect things that are Lamaila. Relative to those things Lamaila, the details of them as they come down here on earth are a Dover Kotan. But they're the most important thing for us, much more important than any sciences or philosophies or anything like that. And the Ritva says another point as well. They're called Dover Kotan because why did they have to be brought up? Because we're saying, because for example, as Rashi is saying, Abaye and Rava didn't know what the earlier generations, what Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai, 200 odd years before them, had learned, and therefore they had to discuss all these points over again. Therefore, it's called Dover Kotan in the sense only because of their partner Samoichin relative to the earlier generation didn't have to be raised. But again, Chas v'Shalom, to think that Torah, that any part of Torah is a Dover Kotan, it's the most important thing that a person has in the world. And then there's another explanation. This is before Rav Shimon Yochai. This Rabbi Rechem and Zakkai was 100 years or so before Rav Shimon Yochai. But there's also Rabbi Levi Yitzchok makes a point in a couple of places in his writings that we call it Dover Kotan and Dover Gadol respectively, in the sense that after all, the Torah has a Pnimius and a Chitzonius. There's Pnimius HaTorah and not Chitzonius. You don't call any part of Torah Chitzonius, but you have Pnimius HaTorah and you have Nigla of Torah. So Nigla is called the Dover Kotan because it deals with the Achurayim of the Machshava of the Eivishter relative to the Pnimius HaMochin, which is in Yonim of Kabbalah and Yonim of Maisim Merkava and everything, which are called Dover Gadol. But as the Rashba and the Ritva say, Chas v'Shalom, to think that those are cotton relative to any sciences or technologies or secular studies or whatever, those are a good Dover Gadol, and the other things are completely unimportant. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. It's today, Yud Aleph Shabbat. So the Rebbe talks about the Pashtus when Mashiach Tzidkenu comes and is revealed here in the Dalet Amos of the Friedrich Rebbe and with the place where he was the last 10 years of his life in this world, and he davened and learned and announced La'alta L'Gaula in 770. So we will have also La'alta Mamash, especially since so long has passed, decades have passed since then, and so much has been added in Torah and Mitzvahs. So for sure, the time has already come for the Gula Amitis Vashlema, Poyo Mamash, La'alta Mamash, Tefu from Yad Mamash. Continuing on halachas of lechem mishnah, so we said that you have to have lechem mishnah by each of the meals, and you make a little mark on it so you know where to cut. You put the loaves that you're going to cut right in front of you, so you don't have to be maver al mitzvahs. No matter how many meals you eat, he says you need two whole loaves by each one. And the same way, for example, you're eating mezonos after a kiddush by day, you also should have two whole ones. Although the Alter Rebbe doesn't mention that point that you should need two whole pieces of mezonos if you're making kiddush and having mezonos afterwards. So the Pashtus, according to the Alter Rebbe, it's not necessarily so.